When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Boy and the Heron is over. Here on Post Show Recaps Theater, we are just getting started. My name is Grace, and I'm not alone. If I'm the Heron, then he's the Boy. Ariel's here. Ariel, how you doing?
I'm so good. Yes, I feel so boyish after walking out of this movie. I feel like if I eat some wara wara that I might be able to fly.
I haven't seen the dubbed version yet, the American, but I hear that Robert Pattinson does a good job as the which version did you see? Did you see Japanese?
Yeah, this is really funny because there's both there are two layers to this. There's the practical element and like the purist element.
Yes.
The purist element, I'm like, oh, I really want to see it in the subtitle version because I have a history of that and it just feels more right.
Yeah.
But like when a movie is, when it's this big and it's a Miyazaki film, like you get some really, to your point, some heavy hitter voice actors. And I haven't seen it yet, so I saw the subtitle version as well, just like you did.
Yeah, Christian Bale, Robert Pattinson, Mark Hamill,
oh my God, Florence Pugh,
Willem Dafoe, Dave Bautista. Yeah, it's good. It's a really good dubbed cast.
And MCU Batman, because that's who Dave Bautista plays.
Does he?
No.
I think he plays.
What's his name? Drax. Drax the Batman Drax. Destroyer.
Drax man. Yeah. Anyway, we're talking The Boy and the Heron. It's Miyazaki's latest film. I'll just say this up front. I saw this movie in September and meant to go try and see it again before we're going to cover it.
But where did you see it, Grace?
At the film festival. It's international and it's in the city of Toronto. Yeah. I don't know if you're a sports, like a baseball person, but all this week. So there's a really big Japanese baseball star who,
oh,
there was a whole thing where like people were tracking his private plane, which they thought, this is the best, right? They thought it was him coming to Toronto to sign his contract. And then some, a real like reporter was like, hey, it's like, that is him coming to Toronto. So everybody was like, and then the plane landed and a guy from Shark Tank got off and they're like, uh-oh, it's not. It's not him. And then Shohei Ohtani, then the next day, the next morning, like immediately said he was signing with the Los Angeles Dodgers. And then ever since, every article that's come out has been like, pretty good that he didn't sign with Toronto. That place is pretty terrible. We're like, it's like one of the biggest cities in North America. So Torontonian baseball fans are not happy this week. So
this was,
yeah. Be okay, careful who you insult there.
Yeah. people yeah. out there who have sports teams that yeah. are, represent their regions.
Yeah.
I caught wind of this because I was in New Orleans yes. and I was talking to Jenny,
yes.
Famous Toronto sports enthusiast.
Yes.
And I don't want to betray any conversations, but there yeah. was a lot of excitement. It was perhaps two days before.
It was the plane tracking day, 100%. It was like, because then and there was also a rumor, this is the other rumors, of a Japanese player who Shohei Ohtani has always looked up to. He made a reservation for like 40 people at a famous sushi restaurant in Toronto. So I wrote that like, he's coming. He's on the plane.
Yeah, it must have been the day before.
He's gonna sign. Okay, yeah.
Because she was fully yeah. Because then the next day, I believe it was Saturday, it was announced. Because then I saw that headline, and ordinarily I would have no context besides like the
Friday was
astronomical number that yeah. was released.
Yeah, biggest contract in sports history, biggest contract by a baseball player by double the if you combine the second and third biggest contracts ever, it's the first. It's not as big as the first. It's wild. It's an insane contract.
Yeah, and I thought of the first person I thought of was normally the first person I would have thought of was you
sure.
because of the Toronto, but this time because I had seen Jenny's excitement,
yeah,
I was really sad for
yeah
her.
It's a pretty sad day for all of us, yeah. Well, anyway, we're here to talk about The Boy and the Heron,
but I mean baseball yeah. is the most important part of this movie that we're talking about.
Is that true?
No, there's no baseball, unfortunately.
I mean this all started because I was saying that it's been a while since I've seen it. But I really enjoyed this movie. When I saw it, I think I'm not a huge Miyazaki person. I think I've really only seen Spirited Away. Although my thing about Miyazaki movies is that I think Spirited Away was the first thing I watched when I got my own Netflix account. I'd been using my brother's, and then Netflix did the, like, you have to have your own account, you have to live in the same household. Netflix wants me to watch every Miyazaki film. You love this stuff, Chris. You love it. You gotta, which like I do, but it's not my like go-to, especially if I'm not watching it. If I'm watching it in the Japanese with subtitles, these are commitments where you have to sit and watch a movie instead of mm-hmm. being able to be on your phone. So, I really love, I like The Boy and the Heron a lot. I think it's pretty fun. It's pretty weird. And I think that the story is pretty, I think it's a good one in terms of like this boy who's suffering with the loss of his mother and trying to sort of figure things out, and in the Miyazaki-ness of it all, explores an alternate magical fictional world. It's good. I don't know you've seen it much sooner than I have. So what did you make of this movie, Eero?
I saw it not too long ago. I think that first of all, this is the kind of dumb stuff, my story that I'm about to tell, not the movie. This is the kind of dumb stuff that I'm really interested in. I was reading about like the Japanese marketing for this film, and like the original, I believe it was like in July that it came out in Japan.
Yes.
And this is like one of the most, this is something that I wanted like Marvel to do with Endgame, when like in the year between Infinity War and Endgame, I was like, it'd be so badass if they didn't release any trailer for it, and just like the anticipation would build and build. And like, that's what they did for this movie, at least in Japan. Yeah. There was no trailer release. There was one image that they decided on for like the poster, and there was nothing else. No commercial, no nothing. And I was like, and it still made so much money, and it's awesome. I mean, because obviously Miyazaki is loved all over the world, but especially obviously in Japan. And I just love that part of it. And similarly, I had heard before about how this was it's a very Miyazaki thing that he keeps like retiring and then unretiring, which I also think is so fascinating and also funny, because he could literally do whatever he wants and people are like, thank God he's making more movies.
Well, I think at TIFF it was like, it's Miyazaki's last film. And then, and I don't know if he gets to that. And then it was like a little bit after TIFF, he's like, I don't know if that's my last film.
Yeah.
I'm going to work on something else. And they're like, you bastard.
Listen, when you're as creative as he clearly is, you know, sometimes you think you're done, and then you're like, oh wait, I have more in there. I mean, is my supposition as someone who's not creative. That part of it is really interesting to me, of like him having more to say. And in regards to this film specifically, like the way that it's a movie that he made for his grandson, and that he wanted to leave a message about life to a child whose own you know, life he was going to be a part of, but for such a for relatively such a small part of that childhood of that life, and to leave something behind for him, I think is like really profound and just makes the movie. All to say, the reason I mention all this is because like that's what I went into the movie like with context of, and it definitely enriched the experience for me. Because the movie has a lot to say about all those things, about legacy, about truth, about family, about like what you believe in when you're a kid and how you, you know, negotiate the world, and, you know, adults don't treat you a certain way and you think you deserve better and know better and all that, like these very, very universal, human themes. And I thought it was really good. I think I enjoy a complicated movie, and this movie was a little bit complicated. So at points I was like a little bit confused, but never so confused that I was out of it. It was always like, I think intentionally, like a confusion that was still, you know, having you lean in and lean forward and kind of continue with the momentum of the movie. And because by the end of it, really, it's like some of the specifics don't matter, even though a lot do. And I was pleasantly surprised at how much explanation they give to some of like the inexplicable things. But at the end of the day, it's more about like the emotions and the relationships. And that's what we love. And you and me, Grace, yeah. we love a weird time loop kind of situation that we'll get into in spoiler territory.
It's true. Before we dive in, so first of all, make sure you subscribe, pushyourcups.com/movies. It looks like next week we're gonna cover Wonka, which Ariel is getting really good reviews, gotta say.
I have been saying from the beginning that this movie was gonna be good. I'm just kidding. I'm as surprised as anybody else. Hey. I'm shocked. I'm almost, in a way, this is gonna sound so crappy, but in a way, I'm like, I'm a little bit almost disappointed that it's good, because now I have to go into it with like a discerning eye. I was ready to not hate it, but like be ready to laugh alongside with it and at it. I'll say
listen, maybe though, for all the you know, people being like, oh, maybe this doesn't look very good. And then people went into the critics went into like the screeners being like, this is surprisingly good. And now it's getting good reviews. Will all the audience crowd be like, oh, that's actually was not actually very good. But
maybe it's like Golden Globes where they give a bunch of alcohol to all the reporters and the artists, and then the movie's great.
Oh, they give them, don't give them alcohol, they give them like Wonka candy, right?
Yes.
Fuzzy bots.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. And then Poor Things, I think, at least, I think it's been out in the States at a few, I think only 9 theaters last week it was out. I think it's expanding again this weekend, and is certainly, for my money, I don't know if it's the best picture frontrunner. I think Emma Stone is certainly the best actress frontrunner, so I'll try to cover that next week as well. The Boy and the Heron, I have seen it sort of slipping from, you know, people predicting best picture nominees. I kind of saw it in there for a while, and I think there's a lot of stuff. Like The Color Purple, there weren't a lot of screeners for it. I think people have seen it now, and it's coming out Christmas Day, and so I feel like that's getting some contention. This came in third at TIFF for the People's Choice Award. Not to re-mention TIFF again, but I feel like it did have some ability to like maybe be a best picture candidate. I feel like those odds have trimmed dramatically, and now it feels firmly like it's going to try and compete for best animated picture. But do you have a sense of like, is this, because at some point I do feel like it was like, you know, there was talks like, is this the best picture nominee? I don't really see that, but I definitely see it animated. No doubt it'll get nominated for animated. Whether or not it will win it, I think is the,
I could see it slipping into like, you know, some of the extra nominations, you know, and especially in the best movie category, you get a bunch of slots. I don't feel, to your point, I don't feel the momentum. I was hearing a lot about it and like, you know, the lead up and, you know, a sentimental nomination, I think, would make sense for people the way they feel about Miyazaki. I wouldn't say it's a front runner, though.
It did win the weekend. I think it made something like it's made about 12 million American. It's made almost 100 million. Yeah, worldwide. So
this movie made $17 billion. 17 billion.
Billion. yen. No, no, it made, yeah. It did win the weekend, though. So I think
billion that, Canadian monies.
So I think that that's something. But anyway, let me spill the PSRT and we shall get into The Boy and the Heron. So we're set in 1943, and 12-year-old Mahito, his mother is killed in a hospital fire in Tokyo, and his father remarries his deceased wife's younger sister, Natsuko. And they move to sort of a countryside house where there are several old maids. I love the old maids. And Mahito sort of struggling as he's dealing with grief. And he's sort of like annoyed by and followed by and sort of pestered by this gray heron who lives at the estate. And he is following the heron one day and he finds this sort of like sealed tower. It's sort of in ruins near the woods. And he ultimately makes a bow and arrow from the heron's feather. And he gets in a fight with these other school children. And then he sort of deliberately injures himself and hitting himself over the head with a rock. And while he's sort of in recovery, he finds a book called How Do You Live? That has his mother's handwriting inside, which seems like it was intended as a gift for when he was older. Then Natsuko, so his new like stepmom slash aunt, obviously, is missing. Who's not? It was like, you know, sick because of her pregnancy. But he ultimately like sort of goes to find her and sees her as well as one of the maids, Kariko. They arrive at the tower and the heron kind of taunts Mahito. Saying that his mother is alive and they should enter the tower. I believe he shoots the heron and it turns out that there's a little man inside of the heron costume.
It's Danny DeVito, I thought.
It's pretty much just Danny DeVito. Yeah. he goes inside the tower and finds themselves in like this alternate magical world. Inside, Mahito encounters like various people, including a younger version of the maid, Kariko. Himi, a young woman with magical powers who helps them. And there are these like bubble like spirits, which you were mentioning earlier, Wara Wara, I believe. Yeah. And and then also Natsuko's grand uncle who rules the world. He's a powerful wizard. Mahito, Himi, and the heron, they go through the castle. This castle is guarded by giant parakeets who find Natsuko, who is about to give birth. She tells Mahito that she hates him until he'll acknowledge her as his mother. Amidst a search for the missing trio in Mahito's world, a maid tells Mahito's father that the tower was formed when a meteor struck the ground, and that when he was younger, she once disappeared for a year before returning. So Himi is then captured by parakeets, and while rescuing Himi from the parakeet king, Mahito meets with his granduncle, who asks him to take over the job of ruling this world, explaining that only someone who's blood related and free of malice can do so. Mahito says, "No, thank you. That's a lot of work. I'm going to return.
Pass.
Yeah, I'm going to return back to the world where people love me, even though it's hard." The parakeet king seeks to usurp the grand uncle's power, but ultimately causes like the whole thing to collapse and destroy itself. Mahito they escapes with Natsuko and everybody else. And Himi reveals that she is a younger version of his mom. They return back. Mahito, Natsuko, and the heron return, and they're reunited with his father. And all of the alternate world's inhabitants who also escape like turn into like normal animals, basically.
Thank God.
Yeah, and the heron tells Mahito he'll eventually forget about what happened in this alternate world before wishing him goodbye. And then we see a little bit later, Mahito moves back to Tokyo with his family. And that's The Boy and the Heron, Ariel. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, it is wild. I love, to that last point overall, I think the idea of, you know, childhood seeming like its own magical, and I'm saying like real world normal in quotes, childhood, having its own tinges of the, you know, supernatural perhaps, but more so, you know, fantastical, you know, kids have crazy imaginations, and that idea of like eventually you'll forget all of this is really, you know, in a way sweet, but also depressing. And most importantly, like realistic, right? Like you have memories from your childhood that are like so vivid at times, but also there are things that you think of or are reminded by a relative or an old friend. You're like, oh my God, yeah, I totally forgot about that. And, you know, sometimes it's something cool. Sometimes it's something awful and dramatic that you bury. But I thought that was such a wonderfully poignant note to end this incredibly complicated odyssey on, of like, yeah, you rescued all these people and you kind of rescued the world, even though in the process you destroyed another world, but you did the right thing and you may not remember it for all time, but you know, at least the birds aren't murderous anymore. They're normal birds.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting way to sort of articulate this idea at the end, where the heron will be like, you won't remember this anyway, of the like the way that we do and don't remember our childhood, that there's so much of it that happens, that when you're there's scientifically, like when you are a child, every day feels like, you know, and every year feels forever. Scientifically, every year you get older, the year seems shorter because it's less of your life. I don't know if I'm explaining this or am I explaining this right?
Depressing. It does make sense.
Yes. So a year when you are 7 is 1/7 of your life. A year when you're 50 is 1/50 of your life. So it feels like it's passing quicker and quicker. And this is where, like, every time someone at an interview thing is like, can you believe how fast the year went? It's like, no, yeah, like scientifically, we're all experiencing it.
Scientifically, you've never experienced it that short before. So I totally feel your vibe right now.
Yeah. So there's that, right? So this, and then this idea that, yeah, all this stuff happens, it feels like more happens to you as a kid, but then you don't remember it. And so I do really like it. And I love coming of age films. They're my absolute favorite, of trying to examine why people become the people they are. And that the Mojito really grows up to be, you know, we don't see him as he's old, but he goes through this journey of trying to deal with the fact that his mother died. And when he goes into, ultimately we learn that like Kimi is his mom, and sort of like she has to stay there, because if she doesn't, so basically when his father learns, like, your deceased wife like disappeared for a year as a kid, like Kimi has to like stay. I mean, we say that the place gets destroyed, but I actually don't know if it like gets destroyed.
I mean, she escapes through a different door at the end back to her point in the timeline. So like, right. It's this weird thing where she was only in that imaginary world for a year, quote unquote, as far as like our real life time.
Right.
And then, you know, the timey-wimey-ness of then much later on, her son finds that world and she's still there. But at the end, he goes through one door and she goes to the other door to literally live her life and have him. So it's like he got to see her. Yeah, I didn't even quite realize this part. Like, he got to see her at a different point in her life, even after losing her in the beginning of the movie.
Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
We need to go.
Hang on. It is our time.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously watched a lot of stuff that relates to this. We watched Dark, which has some of this stuff in it. We watched, then we watched, what's the movie? Watch like Le Petit Maman. If you've ever seen that,
yeah,
watch that after this. And then, and then Tales from the Loop, obviously the first episode of that reminds me of this as well. So these idea that you could, yeah. And that he can't rescue and save her. Like he wants to rescue her, especially once he learns it's his mom, because he couldn't do anything when she's in the fire in Tokyo. Yeah. Right?
And even the way he's trying to rescue his aunt in the beginning, before he even learns about his mom, it's like he's clearly trying to make up for not being able to rescue his mom from this fire, even though adult people, firefighters literally couldn't do it. But he, as a child, of course he does. It's this human thing, of course. Like he couldn't do anything. He feels responsible. And now he has to make it right in this instance.
Yes. And so then he can't it, like the world, if he did like bring her to his world, he can then not exist. So all things happen.
Classic.
All things happen as they're meant to be, which is a thing. So like I am not a believer in like hard things happen to you because they should happen to you. Like I'm not a religious person. I would say I might be spiritual, but I'm definitely like that there are like, you know, forces greater than us and we can't see, but I don't believe, I'm not like a classically religious person.
Right.
But the idea that like, cause there's this belief, right. Of like, you know, people, when you question, you know, Christianity or any religion, you're like, well, then why do bad things happen? Why does a God let bad things happen? I am not a believer that like bad things are supposed to happen and that they like, you know, you get something out of it and that's why bad things happen. But I do believe you can grow so much from bad things happening. And so like in this example, like I obviously don't want Mahito's mom to die. I want her to live and to raise her son and for them to be happy and whatever. But there's so much that he gets out of like this, the events that happen in the film, right? It helps him process then going through, like, you know, going to the tower and everything that happens inside the tower. I hate the parakeets, by the way. Can we talk about that? I hate them. They're so annoying.
They try to be funny as they sharpen their knives and wink at their victims and laugh and cackle. Yeah. I don't find it funny. I find it extremely creepy, especially when they're traveling in massive hordes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not going to get tricked by all the colors just because they're all colorful. You know, you can't fool me. You're evil. I do love the scene where, like, him and the heron are, like, sneaking by all the parakeets. And the heron has, like, a really bad getup kind of on top of his already bad heron getup. He has now added, like, different eyes and another thing so that he looks more like a parakeet.
So good.
And Mahito is just, like, traveling under a large pot that he ostensibly probably would have been cooked in, and they're just walking by all these parakeets. It's very, very silly, like kind of almost slapsticky.
The herons or the parakeets just being hungry, very relatable. But you know,
That part I get. That part's just human / animal. You know, everyone's always hungry. But the point about Mahito, you know, like making this choice is, I think, really interesting because, you know, to the extent that this is at all a time travel story, it's not. It's more, I would say, it has like a time loop element in regards to the mom specifically. But in as much as this is involves time travel, like this is very much like a Lost show, the show Lost style, like whatever happened. And, you know, the idea that he, like you said, he has to make this choice and kind of, he has to first, before he makes the choice to return to his world, he has to first understand why he has to make the choice and why he, you know, like have the understanding of why making that choice is the right choice. And that he would, there was this thing that he does earlier in the movie where he like, he takes a rock and like bludgeons himself on the side of head, which is probably like the least relatable thing he did in the whole movie.
Pretty rough. When you're like,
you know, no,
just
no
down
shots,
for the like, yeah, so. The jaunty like Miyazaki. Like, I'm not a Miyazaki expert. I haven't seen a ton of them. Like, if this like kind of like dark stuff happens in a bunch of them, I haven't seen it. So then I'm like, so fun. And then it's smashing himself in the head with a rock.
He's gonna hurt himself on purpose.
Also very dark like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's so poignant at the end, though, although a bit heavy handed, perhaps hitting the nail on the head or the head with the rock.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, if he were to stay in this world, it's a place without malice, and he recognizes that he has malice within him, at least some of it, and it's, you know, what caused him to do what he did with his head and to his head, and now he has this literal scar that he can point to, and that he would choose to return to the world in spite of the malice both within him and with the world. It's still worth like living and having a life, and that's like, you know, a profound thing that he learned while he was being chased by these murderous parakeets and other animals, but it was mostly the parakeets.
No, I love that so much. I mean, the book that he finds is How Do You Live? And his mother obviously like wanted to give it to him when he was older, never got the chance. Mm-hmm. And I just, the idea that, you know, I can't remember what other, there's another movie that I feel like there are very similar themes to this one that I feel like we talked about, where it's just like, it's hard for me as somebody who has like suffered from depression, that the idea of just, you got to keep going and you have to keep moving and doing it because you will inevitably find the things that are there. And I say all that knowing that like, sometimes I do feel like this is what I'm saying about like bad things happen to people for, you know, good reasons. Or like, again, I don't believe that. And I feel like sometimes when I try to articulate like why this type of story resonates so much with me, I feel like I'm feeding in sometimes to like stigma that can be around it. Cause I feel like if I say to somebody, like somebody who's living with, who has depression, is suffering with depression, to be like, you gotta just keep going. It's like, that is bad. That is unquestionably bad advice. I feel like, I feel like it's true for me. And, but I also feel like we should have lots of mental health services. Canada just launched, our first ever nationwide, help hotline for folks who are having suicidal thoughts. So I'm like, that's great. That's so good. That should be there. That should exist. You should have someone to call if you ever need it. But for me personally, like as somebody who like, I'm not like at the moment, like in the throes of my depression. So this story like really works in terms of like, when you feel like it's so, and not that he's like, because he's more like looking for something tangibly to like, he is depressed. I mean, he's like, purposely like not doing anything. He's like sitting at home. He's just like hanging out. Right. He's like, he's so, and it's not like helping that he's like super isolated.
And he's I think even a preteen, but he's, you know, he's approaching that age.
Yeah. He's 12, I think. Right. So,
yeah. Right.
To me, this, like this story of like, you just got to keep going and try to find the stuff that like is in life that like will keep you going, for me, like works so well. Like it's like, it's, this is the sweet spot for me in terms of like stories that super, super resonate, with me. And I think this one is really effective. Then it has the fun thing of like, yeah, having these like silly parakeets, the grandmas. I love the grandmas at the beginning of the movie, just like constantly chattering, until like somebody comes, clearly like gossiping until like someone comes in and they stop. Like, one thing I want to talk about is like when he goes, so she, the Natsuko goes in when she's having the baby, and when he finds her in the like the room, and she like yells him. So in this magical world, do you feel like whose reality is being, when she's like, you hate me and you don't want me to be your mom, like I'm gonna hate you until you realize that like I am your mother now, whose reality do you think that is from? Do you think that's Natsuko? It could be both. It could be like Natsuko's, like she, like this is now her like stepson who she wants to love and take care of because it was her sister's child and her sister died, and she wants so badly to like have this baby and for them to be siblings and just like for that to work. And also like, or is it like his own like this is what I think she thinks of me, you know, like in this moment where she's like, or are they both just like, she actually does say it because that's what she's thinking. Like, how do you read this? Like, cause it's so interesting that he follows Natsuko in, that she goes into the tower. I think.
Yeah, I think, I mean, first of all, very quickly, I want to mention How Do You Live being a real life book that it's a real life novel that like inspired this story. So I think that's interesting that it's in the movie just as an artifact, even though the story is not all that similar. But to your question, I for sure saw it as both, like, and in the sense that it was like both of their, they were both separately in that world and like accepting that reality as their truth in that moment. And, you know, speaking of truth, I think the movie goes a lot into like, there's always either a lie, you know, hanging in the air, or someone's talking about lying, or someone's talking about never lying, telling the truth. There's the hilarious moment where like the heron's like, I never lie, or like I never tell the truth, or what, or like says it in different ways, and like, well, that's clearly a lie.
Yeah.
And just the idea of like, you know, with his family, they don't tell him, at least as far as I could tell, like the idea that this is his aunt now, who is, you know, his stepmom, is becoming this person, and now she's pregnant with his sibling. It's never really relayed to him. Like he has to be told by someone else. Like there's a better way to handle it, is really what I'm saying. And they really should have been honest with him. Maybe not in the very beginning, but like you really need to tell him, because there's all this stuff hanging around the air of like, she looks a lot like my mom. And like, she says to him at one point, I saw you as a baby and then I never saw you again. My big theory was like, oh my gosh, she's the real mom. And then the other twin sister just like became the mom, 'cause he fell in love. And then anyway, but to the point about the scene, like this is the walls coming down. This is the lies, like everything is off the table except the truth. And then like in this moment of emotional turmoil of like your life possibly ending because you're stuck in this room, the truth has to come out. And like she is worried, like you said, she is worried that he hates her and that he will never accept her. So she turns around and says, I hate you, because, you know, and he in that moment basically turns around and says, or turns his stance around, I should say, and says, calls her his mom. And, you know, he really does genuinely want to take care of her and take her out of there. But I think in that moment, both characters are telling their truth in this room of like weird, you know, flying papers. And they kind of turn into mummies a little bit because the papers are all over them. That felt like one of the few true things that she had ever said to him in their like short interactions, because that's like speaking to her fear of what's like actually true, even though it isn't true, ironically. Like he maybe hates that she, certain things that she does, but I don't think at all he fundamentally hates her. At this point, he's already, you know, he had already been told by somebody else that that's his aunt, and then he realizes. So like, but even before that, or, you know, especially after that, I think he's gonna, he does care about her, and I think he cares about his dad for sure. And in as much as he wants to have a relationship with her and knows what that means as a 12-year-old, she's a member of his family, and he wants to protect her like he couldn't protect his mom. So I think that scene is definitely important to their story.
Yeah, I guess my theory of like, is this like what he thinks she's thinking? Because it's not what he actually thinks, right? Because he knows, like he does care, like he goes to try and like find her when she goes missing, right? So it's not like he dislikes her. He's just a 12-year-old.
No. Yeah, she's worried that that's the truth. It's true in the sense of like that is her speaking her worry, which is a truth. And then he is rejecting that truth with his own truth, which is, I care about you and I want to protect you and I want to get the hell out of here. Please don't stay here.
Right. Can we talk about the heron for a bit? I mean, it's the boy and the heron.
Absolutely not. I refuse.
I wasn't sure I was going to like it. One thing I was a little bit annoyed by, like if I hope that you've seen this movie, if you're listening to the podcast, if not, I presume you like know enough about it. I was kind of annoyed that like the promo for The Boy and the Heron that I saw a lot, like there's obviously the poster, which is just like a beautiful artistic rendering of a heron. But a lot of the, like the still image I saw was like, I don't know that I knew for sure that like the heron, there's a man inside the heron. But then when you're like, I'm like, oh yeah, the one of the promo images is like, is him, you know, with like the heron costume that like basically like a hoodie now that he's wearing.
Yeah. It really is. Yeah, it's like a dog hoodie.
Yeah. I kind of wish I never saw it, because I think that the reveal of it just being like some mythical dude is like in a haircut.
Danny DeVito.
It is just Danny DeVito in a haircut. Very funny. It's very good. I didn't think it would work for me. It's kind of the weird that I often don't actually like and I'm not drawn to, but boy, I thought like by the end of the movie, I'm like, oh, what a silly little heron guy.
Yeah. No, I love it. Miyazaki films are definitely very they're obviously all over the place in their fantasy, you know, genre, and they explore different areas of it. But like there is a lot of there's always a lot of like gross stuff, like whether it be viscera, yeah, when he's like cutting the animal. Even this is mildly gross when like the head is popping out of the heron's mouth and you're like, what is happening? I was lucky enough not to notice the poster. I mean, I remember seeing the poster, but I wasn't at all taking in any information.
I will say the poster with the beautiful picture of the heron does have a little eye in the beak, but it's basically a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles
emote that we have
it
in the Discord.
It basically is. Yeah,
Hayao Miyazaki copied the Discord.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, this, you know, I was lucky enough not to notice that. So that what it actually was a reveal to me, because like there are plenty of Miyazaki films where something like this happens, where something way grosser happens, where things are like growing out of people. But then there's like the very normal, like it's a real animal who just happens to talk, and there's no like little man with a big nose poking its head out of the animal's mouth pretending to be the real animal. So I was not expecting that, but it just made it like it really sets the tone for how weird the movie's gonna get. And full credit to him for being able to fly. Like when he's just the heron, he's able to fly so gracefully and beautifully, but once he's like the little man with the hoodie of the heron, he's like can barely fly and is still thankfully able to like
so funny
save the lives of multiple characters by kind of fake flying and gliding around.
So good. I love it. Do you have anybody else? There's not a ton of other people. There is Kariko, who's like the maid.
Yeah, young Kariko. I thought that was really interesting. I guess ostensibly like young Kariko would have also returned to her own time, because we have the like little figurine of old Kariko that gets stuck with him in the world that he kind of carries around with him, and then at the end turns into, you know, old Kariko proper. But it totally would make sense if, you know, she also spent time in that world, because she seems to know more about it and she kind of follows him in there, even though she wants to tell him don't go in there, or she does really tell him don't go in there. It would make sense that his mom, that she would have spent time there and then returned from there and either didn't remember or only remembered some things and was there for a certain amount of time and learned from it and moved on. And now she went on and lived her life and has aged into this adorable old little figurine/person.
Yeah. I like this movie a lot. I think it's pretty strong. I think it's a strong contender to win animated film of the year if it were not for one Spider-Man movie this year.
Yeah, that's tough. I actually, as you were about to say that, I'm like, what is she about to say? But yes, I think for sure that would be the biggest competition, even though I thought the first one was better. I love the second one, but I thought the first one was better. I think they should just have, I feel like some of these movies turn into some of the years of best animated film turn into like really a race between two films, sometimes three. Yeah. So maybe it would be like more dramatic to only have like two or three nominations. But.
Yeah, I don't think there's much else. I think that you probably have I think everything below Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse and The Boy and the Heron is a pretty big step down. I think it's like Elemental, Nimona, Super Mario Brothers movie did make a lot of money.
Oh, Nimona is at least loved.
I don't think at the same level though. I don't
Damn
think so.
Damn, great.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh yeah, Wish. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That was probably my favorite of the year.
Yeah. So I feel like this is a runaway for Spider-Man.
Grace, why didn't Past Lives just release like an animated version and then they could compete in two categories? Category fraud, I say category Plus.
Can I tell you, one of the movies I saw at The Peasants, which doesn't seem like it's in the running, but it's did you watch the Van Gogh movie where like everything was made, like every image of in the movie?
I did eventually see it.
The Peasants is the same, where like basically they had like hundreds of artists create like thousands of still frames and then like animated them. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting movie, but they have to do that basically, but for past lives. So
yes, I don't see what the problem is.
Fair enough.
Get Miyazaki to do a cartoon version of Past Lives and see how weird it can get. All that, like,
pretty fun.
All the different layers of Inyang, like perhaps physically represented in real life. I would pay to see it.
Interesting week at the box office, Ariel, in terms of, especially for Japanese films. Two of the top three movies at the box office this past weekend were Japanese film. The Boy and the Heron, obviously, number one. And then Godzilla Minus One being number three at the box office. Hunger Games still holding strong.
Hunger Games still holding strong.
I think that's probably people going to see it in multiple sittings.
Mm-hmm. Right. They're like, okay, I'm going to pay for the half, and then I'll return after lunch and see the other half. Godzilla Minus One, something that you and I had talked about, both of us enjoyed it. It was, you know, definitely one of the better Godzilla movies, arguably the best Godzilla movie in quite some time, whether American or Japanese, but obviously for it to be a fully Japanese made film just makes it. And for the budget that it was made, I think it was like 15 million or
I heard that he said like that. Came out and reported that and said, I would have been happy to have $15 million to make this movie. So
we just confirmed it. He made this movie for $20.
$20, yeah.
And it looks great. Like it looks really good. The amount of like between some CGI and what seemed to me like some practical effects. The combination looks really good. It manages to thread the needle of like looking like an old school Godzilla movie, but also feeling like updated and modern and just like entertaining. I thought it was, if you like Godzilla movies, this is an actually good Godzilla movie. It has, I think most of the times we're like, yeah, we're going to blow stuff up and step on stuff and then maybe he'll fight King Kong. But here it's like, a little bit like this movie, there are like real emotional stakes, and it kind of takes you by surprise how much you actually care about some of these characters.
I think the thing that works is that I haven't seen Godzilla versus Kong. I will probably watch it because the trailer came out for the second one. Is it the new Empire that's coming out early next year as part of like the MonsterVerse, which also includes the Monarch TV show where the Russells played the same
father
character
and son.
No, they played the same father and son, but playing the same character, which is hilarious. For me, I mean, Godzilla is so linked to obviously like a post-war Japan, the idea basically being that like nuclear bombs he's a nuclear monster basically. There's something that worked so well about this movie. It's a pretty simple telling of a Godzilla movie, but it's so good. It's got like, you know, the like team up thing that I think a lot of good like action movies have of like, we need someone, we need a scientist, and we need like a guy who will drive the boat. And like, it's so, it's so good.
We're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah. It has the like emotional resonancy to me of like, there's a lot of like beats in the story that are like quite emotional. I saw an IMAX. I absolutely loved it. I really went into it knowing nothing other than this was a Godzilla movie.
Yeah. And the minus one part.
And I still don't know the minus one.
I meant to Google it, and I didn't. Wasn't me. So anyway. I was like, I saw Godzilla 1, and then I saw Godzilla Minus 1.
Yeah. Do I need to have seen Godzilla Minus 2 before I go see Godzilla Minus 1?
You missed it. Right, exactly. Like, what order are we going in here? Are they releasing them in reverse chronological order? That would be twisted.
I loved it. I thought it was so fun. It was like such a popcorn, you know, movie thing. I kind of love the like surprise nature of Godzilla Minus One. I didn't even know it was playing in Toronto. And then I looked it up and was able to go catch showing a coworker of mine who knows to watch movies. Like, should I go be seeing Godzilla Minus One? Is like, yes. Like knowing the types of movies you like.
If you care. Yeah, exactly. It.
So fun. So fun. I loved it. There's the movie theater has, I feel like right now, such a mix of like, there is something for everybody. Like if you want to go see a movie, it's not like this is like, oh man, like Marvel took up like 16 of the, you know, 20 theaters in my local, like, but even if you want to go see a Marvels movie, like, the Marvels is still playing. So, like,
thank God the Marvels did bad so that Grace could feel good about the amount of variety that we have.
I just, you know, but well, imagine that, imagine that Dune had come out, right? Dune would have been like, oh, kind of dominating the box, which,
now
like,
I'm living in that world.
I know, which, like, I don't want. I don't want Dune to have been delayed, but also I just think, like, right now it's like, I don't know that this is like appealing to like people who don't go to the movies, but to me right now, like, I'm like checking all the because not every theater I want to go see stuff. Like, the thing I'm trying to go see, oh, I tried to go see The Boy and the Heron. I was like trying to like figure out which movie theater I could go to, but it's like, but not every movie theater is playing all the same stuff. Like, if I look at this Black Weekend's box office, it's The Boy and the Heron, The Hunger Games, Godzilla Minus One, Somehow Trolls Band Together is still number four, Renaissance, Wish, Napoleon, Waitress the Musical, we have Silent Night, The Marvels, Thanksgiving, Saltburn, The Holdovers, Poor Things was playing, Dream Scenario, Eileen, Oppenheimer is getting re-released in theaters in January. I believe it's still playing. Priscilla, Next Goal Wins, Fallen Leaves, Anatomy of a Fall, Monster. There's so many movies out right now. And there's not really a movie there that, like, there's some obviously that I'm like, yeah, it's fine. But like, there's a lot of really good movies out right now.
Yeah, there's I've been hearing just from like casual movie observers, to your point, like, not everyone cares, you know, what, yes, movies are out 100%. In the option, but like, for sure, there seems to be the perception, even to like, quote unquote, movie outsiders, that there is a lot going on right now, whether it's stuff that's going to be released on the streaming services in the next few weeks, or just a lot of these movies coming out that like we're talking about and, true, you know, gearing up to talk about. There is at least, and I think that's a big deal, right? Like, for kind of everyone to be aware right now of so many things coming out, I think is telling that like people, you know, care to varying degrees about that kind of stuff. But yeah, there are a lot of movies, and even though I've seen a lot of them, I always feel like I'm behind.
Well, I didn't even, that's that. So that list I was reading is only theatrical releases, which means I didn't name May, December, which I feel like The Weeknd came out had, I think people were both having a lot of fun. And then the people who didn't watch it opening weekend were like, everybody spoiled me on May, December. So you have to be quick. And then Leave the World Behind, which Jess and I covered on Full Spoiler Recaps this past week, is a lot of people are being like, I found this movie incredibly interesting. I had two people reach out to me just to be like, this movie is wild. So yeah, it's like, there's a lot of movie stuff happening right now, Ariel.
I always joke, but it's too much. Like, it's too much. It is, you know, obviously it is a joy for us who enjoy movies and would be seeing them anyway, but like, it's a lot. And I feel like this time of year was always going to be tricky, but with like the strike of it all and certain things moving, certain things getting dumped, certain things just, you know, there was just going to be a lot of stuff out regardless. And I have a feeling that like the some things remained in place because the strike ended up finishing, and then you have like a little bit of a traffic jam that consumers love, but are, you know, is a little bit intimidating quantity wise.
Yeah. Well, as I said, next week we'll be covering Wonka, and we'll see if we can get an episode out on Poor Things. In the meantime, Ariel, what else you got going on? Where can people find you?
Oh, I'm just recovering from a lot of stuff last week. A lot of potting that I did. I'm covering 6 Feet Under with Dr. Amanda, doing a season one rewatch. Rewatch for us, but just a spoiler-free watch for people. Season one was released on Netflix. The whole series was released on Netflix. And we are, you know, almost finished with season one, so that's exciting. And then Chappelle and I are recording a holiday themed Grey's Anatomy episode for this month, and I think that's everything. Just like the 17 million movies you and I have to cover for the rest of the year. I am on Twitter X at that other Ariel.
In addition to movies, I'm currently chatting about Fargo, The Curse, The Crown. Yellowstone comes back in January for 10 episodes in 3 weeks. So Rich and I will be trying to do that. Full spoiler recaps, as I said, if you're a movie buff, this week we talked about Leave the World Behind, which I thought was like really, really good. I feel like people either love it or hate it, though, so it'll be interesting.
I think the Asmail heads came to party, and they knew what they were going to get.
Yes, yes, agreed. So yeah, I'm on social media at Hi From Grace. We'll be back next week. Until then, I'm Grace, he's Ariel, and we are Push Request Theater.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.